Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, we're learning more about the impact the pandemic is having on the Hoosier restaurant industry. A new electric car service breaks the mold of vehicle financing. Site selectors weigh in on what Indiana business will look like post-pandemic. Plans are in place for Indiana's first non-smoking casino. Ivy Tech announces its newest official campus. A sports broadcasting vet takes on a new challenge. And we preview the Million Meal Marathon. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. Newly released numbers bring into sharper focus the degree of damage the pandemic has inflicted on the restaurant industry. 41% of Indiana restaurant owners say they may not make it through the winter. Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association CEO Patrick Tam joined Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick to offer perspective.
Let's get right to these numbers. They are amazing. About one-third of those surveyed here in Indiana say business conditions worse in August than in July. And again, 41% say they don't know if they'll be in business 6 months from now if things don't change. Did these numbers surprise you at all?
No, actually, these numbers, we've been forecasting the next 6 months as being harder than the last 6 months. There was really no surprise because we talked to our owners and are pretty in tune in terms of what they're facing on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And it's very challenging, not just for owners, but more importantly and most importantly, the hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers that we used to employ.
Yeah. Some news late in the week, Governor Holcomb announcing that the state will go to level five statewide, essentially relaxing the restrictions that were in place. That will not be the case, though. Marion County, Indianapolis will not participate in that. Your reaction to that?
No, we were very thankful for Governor Holcomb's movement to stage five. Realized, though, with social distancing, we're not truly going to be at 100%. So we still have some significant restrictions. We understand that. But, you know, what the governor said, though, which I want to make sure Hoosiers understood and heard him loud and clear, that businesses that practice the proper sanitation, disinfection, all those practices that we were required to do via state law, federal regulation as well, restaurants that are doing that, taking the Hoosier Hospitality Promise, which they can do, and also is supported with the state through the Indiana Destination Development Corporation and the governor administration, but that people will vote with their feet on restaurants and all businesses that are taking proper protocol seriously.
Yeah, mentioned earlier, a group of about a dozen, 15 mm-hmm. restaurants, bars, nightclubs filed a suit in an attempt to challenge essentially these restrictions. Do you think that, how do you think that'll play out?
Well, we're not involved in that mm-hmm. Process or that lawsuit, but, you know, our industry's been the hardest hit, and people are trying to find ways to debt service. People are trying to find ways to keep people employed. And also not face complete financial ruin. The hospitality industry is truly the industry of opportunity. We represent 8 out of 10 of our owners started out entry level. Hmm. Women owners, minority owners, leaders, decision makers lead any industry in America. We represent truly an opportunity to actually achieve the American dream. Yeah. And that's the challenge where those businesses are not the typical business financed. They're financed off credit cards, personal loans. Their homes are mortgaged into their businesses. So this, when a business fails in the hospitality industry, it oftentimes means complete and utter financial ruin.
Yeah, I know you are on record as saying there needs to be some stimulus, some support from the federal government. No, there's a lot of talk of things on Capitol Hill right now. What do you think needs to happen, and do you think it's actually going to happen in an era when bipartisanship is really at a minimum?
It is at a minimum. Unfortunately, you know, we've had 6 months of government-ordered shutdowns in a global pandemic, which we understand, but we've only received 8 weeks of relief. Mm-hmm. Senator Young, which I'm proud that he's from the state of Indiana, actually has a bipartisanship piece of legislation called the Restart Act with a leading Democrat, Senator Bennett from Colorado. That is the true approach and the best approach for America, for Hoosiers, and we should be very thankful that a lot of those elements now are being talked about in a larger package, but Senator Young and Senator Bennett cooperatively in a bipartisan fashion, already have over 54-plus signatures of other senators on that piece of legislation.
Okay, very quickly, Patrick, we're out of time, but quickly, you and I talked earlier, and you're seeing some positive activity in some of the suburban areas around the state.
Yeah, we actually see quite a bit of activity, whether that's at the Yard and Fishers, whether that's in Goshen, Newburgh, Indiana, outside of Evansville. Central business districts are very, very hit hard, not just in downtown Indianapolis, but also Fort Wayne, Evansville, South Bend, and other places, because all the cultural amenities, attractions, and so forth, and offices are not being utilized as they have in the past. Would encourage people to try to get back to their offices just for a couple days a week. Reintroduce yourself to your dry cleaner as well as your local restaurant.
Yep. Big story, big impact as well. Patrick Tam, the president and CEO of the Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association, as always, thanks for joining us. We'll be in touch.
Hey, thank you.
A new electric car service has arrived in Indianapolis. Motor Drive allows customers to pay a monthly subscription fee to drive the electric car of their choice. Head of Strategy and Business Development Mike Barg came on the show to tell us how it works.
All right, let's get right to it. I know you're coming to us from an office in Denver, but Motor Drive, this is really an idea out of the innovation unit of electric giant AES, Energy Giant, the parent of Indianapolis Public and Light Company here in Indianapolis. Talk about the business model and really what Motor Drive is all about.
Sure. So what Motor is all about is accelerating electric car adoption, giving people the opportunity to get in electric cars, experience them, and ultimately change the lifestyle away from gasoline vehicles into electric. Mm-hmm. So the purpose of Motor Drive is to give people an easy subscription where all you have to do is download an app and get a car delivered to you in order to experience these cars for the first time. And through that, we're offering some of the most interesting cars in the market to make this happen.
Yeah, so this is not a car sharing. This is that people are familiar here with Blue Indy. This is not that. This is a, as you say, a monthly subscription that you can use for as long as you like. And ultimately, if you want to buy the car, you can do that too.
Exactly. The only similarities with Blue Indy is we operate in Indianapolis and we're both interested in the future of electric cars. Beyond that, this is a subscription where the car is delivered to your home. You get it for as long as you want. And the cars that we offer are the best cars in the market right now. You'll get superior performance, very likely, to the car you're driving today, a lot more fun features, and a driving experience that's pretty unique. It'll be quieter, smoother, and with some of the cars, a lot faster.
Yeah, I know Tesla is among the cars that that you offer. So tell us how it works, though, because it seems like a fairly simple process in terms of going out and downloading the app.
Definitely. So you'll download the app, provide some basic information, obviously, so we can make sure you're qualified to drive, provide a credit card, and pick a delivery date in the car you want. From there, we'll drop it off at your house, and it becomes a monthly subscription where you pay as long as you want the car. The goal here is to provide a flexible way to experience electric cars. So if you want to try it for a few months, you can return the car after that. If you decide to keep it for years, it's yours as long as you want it.
Okay, you just launched the model, just launched the business. Give us your thoughts on what the early reaction has been. And do you see the possibility? India is the first market. Do you see the potential for expansion?
Definitely. So in Indianapolis, thank you, Indy. We've been so excited by the engagement so far. We had a lot more interest than we expected. We're finally caught up on our wait list, which is why we're giving the app direct for download as of the beginning of next week. So we're excited about the engagement. We now have everybody who wants a car in one, and we're excited to continue to grow. I think when it comes to Beyond Indianapolis, we're talking about our goal is to give everyone access to an electric car, and 70% of Americans haven't experienced an electric car to date. So we have a lot ahead of us, and we don't have any plans for the next city yet, but our goal is to get everyone this experience in the country.
All right, Motor Drive, a new concept already here in Indianapolis, the first market in the country. Mike Barg is the head of strategy and business development at Motor. Mike from Denver, thanks for joining us. We look forward to talking to you and watching Motor really roll out.
Situated in the limestone capital of the world, Bedford's Monon Station played a key role in shipping tons of Indiana limestone to construct prominent buildings like the Pentagon and the Empire State Building. Now, however, the empty and dilapidated station is on the Indiana Landmarks 10 Most Endangered list. Around Indiana, reporter Mary Rachel Redmond takes us to Lawrence County to learn about a plan that could save the station.
It may not look like much now, but when Bedford's Monon Station was built in 1926, it was a major player in shipping these giant blocks of highly valued rock across the country, ultimately playing its own part in helping grow Bedford's then booming economy as the limestone capital of the world.
This building really represents the heyday of Indiana's limestone production and freight transportation. It's an important part of the history of the community, the history of Indiana, and really the history of limestone in the United States.
Indiana limestone in and around Bedford is some of the finest in the country and even the world. Behind me is Empire Quarry. A lot of the limestone here was used to build the Empire State Building and other iconic American structures, like the Pentagon.
We've got buildings that are famous throughout the world that were constructed of Indiana limestone. How many freight depots, passenger depots in Indiana, let alone in the country, are built of limestone and have a tile roof? For a building that was pretty much a utilitarian structure, but the beauty here is just remarkable.
What would this entrance
have been? This is the entryway for the public into the public waiting station.
The building also doubled as a passenger station for the Monon Railroad.
It was the main line in and out of Bedford for probably 50 to 75 years. Anybody that wanted to go to Chicago, this was an easy place to get on and take them right to downtown Chicago. Or if they wanted to go south to Louisville, it was the other way on the route. So it was a main conduit when roads weren't very good of getting to where the major cities were.
If this is a baggage door.
And Indiana Trails President Richard Vonnegut says he wants to see Monon Station used as a connector to major cities again, only this time by bike.
What I'd like to do is see this as being an area that would be attractive to hikers and bicyclists from far away. Bring a national bicycle route through Bedford and build a walkway from the station here over to where the Milwaukee is.
The Milwaukee Vonnegut is referring to is the Milwaukee Road Transportation Trailway, a crushed limestone path that starts near downtown Bedford and will eventually stretch 20 miles through southwestern Indiana, which makes repurposing this historic Monon Station an ideal economic development project for Lawrence County.
Being able to attach to the trail and make the building activated with something going on inside, the statistics show that people who are on foot or on bike tend to spend more money when they go by places.
If we could figure out a way to bring an adaptive reuse of this historic structure to the community, dovetailing it with interest in walking and the trail systems that are being developed here in the community, this really could become a locus for activity in the community that could drive further economic development and redevelopment in this section of downtown. This is one of the great limestone buildings of Indiana, and for that reason, we very much want to see it stay here.
Mary Rachel Redmond, Inside Indiana Business.
What will businesses look like when we emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic? The Site Selectors Guild, an association of site selection consultants from around the world, has released its 2021 forecast, and Indianapolis fares well. Genovis Executive Managing Director Larry Gigrich joined us for a deep dive into the survey.
Coming from the Genovis headquarters in the heart of downtown Fishers there, I mentioned some of these stats. This is an international survey that I know has been done more frequently during the pandemic to try to keep a finger on the pulse of what's happening. I was surprised to see 61% of site selection projects moving forward in the face of the pandemic. You also expected a lot of these projects to continue to launch in 2021.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a really positive sign for our economy, not only in the U.S., but globally as well. The projects are continuing to move forward in an environment like this. And I think a lot of it speaks to the strong health of our economy before COVID-19 really hit us back in March. And I think it's also optimism about the fundamentals of our economy and what that'll look like going forward. And we think that number will only increase, as you noted, as we get into 2021, get well above that 60% number we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and two of the hot areas, the top two, really have connections to Indiana. That's number one, biotech and life sciences, and then advanced manufacturing. Those are both expected to be very positive in 2021.
No, that's right, Gary. And I think it's a tremendous opportunity for Indiana because, as you noted, it really hits our sweet spot. We are so strong in those two areas and have assets throughout the state, talent, infrastructure, our higher education institution, all the things that are key to those two areas. And it's two things that we've done well historically as a state. So it creates a lot of opportunity as we move forward.
Okay, I found this interesting. Suburban areas and mid-sized cities expected to do well in the post-COVID era, if you will. A number of cities were listed, including Indianapolis. Why is Indianapolis on that list? Why is Indianapolis in particular attractive for relocations and expansions?
Well, I think a couple of things. I mean, certainly overall, the economic situation here, in other words, our business climate, other things that are key underpinnings to economic development are solid in the Indy region, for that matter, our state as well. The second part of it, I think that's really important, is we're seeing this with a lot of our clients from small all the way up to very large companies that have operated in very densely populated urban markets, mm-hmm. that they're realizing in a pandemic environment and likely knowing we're going to have future pandemics to deal with, that being heavily concentrated with their talent in those heavily populated areas and downtowns do create some risk. So not that they're going to walk away from all those locations, but rather have other things that help them mitigate risk, meaning suburban locations or smaller communities in mid-sized metro areas to help support. So I think Indianapolis, for those reasons, have shown up on that list and compete very effectively.
You only have about 20 seconds left, Larry, but you also see some reshoring opportunities. Indiana positioned very well for those.
Yeah, absolutely. I think because of those two industry sectors where we're so strong, Gary, it creates an opportunity for us. I think in particular, during this COVID period, we learned that PPE, ingredients for key pharmaceutical products, so much of that coming out of China, that we have to diversify that and also get it closer to home to help us in future situations like we went through with COVID-19.
All right. Larry Gigerich, the Executive Managing Director at Genova, some great perspective and fairly positive signs for economic development going forward. Larry, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gary. Always great to be with you.
When Terre Haute's first casino opens in 2022, it will be the state's first smoke-free gaming establishment. The decision by developer Spectacle Jack aligns with Vigo County and Terre Haute's strict smoking ordinances. Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett and Spectacle Jack CEO Jim Brown talk about the project with Kylie Valletta in the Business of Health.
Mayor, let's start with you. This casino is expected to generate $5.3 million in tax revenue, as well as 1,000 jobs, yet casinos are synonymous with smoking. So how did the city work through this deal to really capitalize on the economic development, but also make sure that the project lines up with some of the new health goals in Terre Haute?
Well, as you can imagine, we're very excited the casino's coming, but we knew there was an issue with potential smoking there. So, you know, when you think about from a community perspective, we've known that we've got poor health. And so we try to, everything that we do as a community now, we try to think about how can we improve the health of our citizens. And so the casino comes, typically there's smoking environments. And so it creates a little bit of consternation that how's that going to affect us locally? We are so thankful that Spectacle Jack was able to figure out that they needed to do what they needed to do in our community. And so it fits perfectly in with our community plan, our tourism component of bringing people to Terre Haute, and then our component of improving the health of our citizens here. And so we just want to make sure that everything we do fits into that strategy. And Spectacle Jack is doing that by making this the first non-smoking casino in Indiana. We couldn't be any more excited.
Okay, Jim, so there will be an outdoor smoking patio with 117 slots and 8 table games. So I'm sure this was a challenging business decision. What won you over to make this casino non-smoking?
When we developed our project plan, we wanted to ensure that the Terre Haute Hard Rock Roxino was a fun and entertaining overall facility with an exciting gaming floor, Hard Rock Cafe, showroom, steakhouse, and a number of other amenities. But we wanted it to be accessible to everybody. And when we look at what Vigo County and Terre Haute are trying to accomplish, and the way that health is moving forward, we made a determination that we were going to be a non-smoking facility, the main facility, but we wanted to respect all of our customers, and 15% of our gaming positions are smoking on a smoking patio that has a half wall, that has a roof, that has fans, has heaters, makes them feel comfortable. Our main heating and air conditioning units are on the other side of the building. All airflow moves out of the facility, and there will be two sets of double doors leading to the smoking patio so that we can ensure, even for smokers, when they come into the main facility, they're going to breathe fresh air. And if they smoke, they'll have a private smoking patio to smoke at. So we think this can be fun for all of our customers, and we can try to do the right thing in the way that we put the facility together.
Okay, very good. And Mayor, I know the city recently launched the See You in Terre Haute campaign, actually about a year ago. You're at the 1 year mark, and there is a health pillar in that campaign. Tell us a little bit about how this casino could fit into that.
Well, as we look at everything we try to do here, as I mentioned earlier, our goal is to improve people's health from every household, kind of across the board. And so we've got pretty stringent smoking rules, but we still have a lot of people that smoke. And it's working with the hospitals, our local doctors, everybody to find a way to help people become more healthy. We've got a high rate of cancer and diabetes and just a variety of things here, higher than the normal. And so we want people to focus on improving their health. And when you bring a huge economic project like the casino into our community, obviously that can swing you in a different direction if we weren't partnered to make this work. And so as we continue to roll this plan out and we work with local businesses and our educational institutions and our healthcare facilities, we're going to really do the best we can to make this the healthiest community in the state of Indiana.
Okay, Jim, just a few seconds left, but a recent poll by the American Lung Association in Indiana says 65% of registered voters support no smoking or vaping inside casinos. So do you think this represents just in general a shift in the gaming industry?
Typically, casinos that don't allow smoking, their revenue declines. And we're hoping to buck that trend. We see more and more people quitting smoking, more and more people requesting and demanding a fresh air environment. So our folks that smoke, there's a place for them, but we're trying to keep up with our health standards and Vigo County and what Terre Haute and both are trying to accomplish. And we want to be partners in that.
All right, very good. Mayor Bennett and Jim Brown, thank you both for being on the show today. I know groundbreaking is about a month away, so good luck with the project.
Thank you.
Ivy Tech Community College is expanding its footprint in Indiana with a recent announcement of its 19th official campus. The Noblesville site will have its own chancellor and offer a full slate of programs matching the needs of local employers. We get more from Ivy Tech President Sue Elsperman.
Ivy Tech has been offering classes in Noblesville since 2014 at the Noblesville site. Now you're making that an official campus, the 19th campus statewide for Ivy Tech. Why Noblesville?
Well, we have been so pleased with the growth in Hamilton County. That campus, which sits within the Noblesville High School footprint, is a wonderful one in which to grow, and it has, to 1,200, which is the size of our first level campus across the state. So 1,200 makes it a campus in our definition. But more importantly, as you mentioned, we will put with that the resources that go to a full campus, meaning a chancellor hired to serve specifically Hamilton County. That will help us better serve the companies there, the schools there, K-12, and all of those who should be coming onto community college. There'll be many more programs. We now have a handful of programs that you can start and complete on that Noblesville site. But as we turn it into a campus, there will be full programs that will be aligned to the high tech, the tech industries that are located in Hamilton County. to the businesses that are there, to the advanced manufacturing, to the healthcare needs. So we see a full complement of programs aligned specifically to the community. And that's part of the plan. We will be having listening sessions and setting up advisory committees for programs, a lot of work over the next year as we prepare to launch this as a full 19th campus for Ivy Tech. But one thing I want to mention, many people don't realize Hamilton County is our fourth largest county in the state and the fastest growing, and yet the only one of the top five counties that didn't have its very own Ivy Tech campus. So I think this was a time to just recognize that the time has come, and we are happy to make that commitment to Hamilton County.
Yeah. And you mentioned alignment. That is such a huge issue in connecting with the needs of employers. You mentioned technology and advanced manufacturing, a lot of that presence in Hamilton County. You sense those programs really align with those needs.
And we will be working with the specific employers over the next year. This rollout, spin out, if you will happen July 1 of 2021. So over the next 9 months, we'll be working very closely with industry to make sure that we have targeted exactly the right degrees, certificates, certifications, and transfer degrees to make sure that this campus meets the needs of Hamilton County as it continues to grow in Indiana.
Yeah, well, you talk about growth in Hamilton County, a growing county. You have room for growth. It's the old Noblesville High School is where the Ivy Tech campus is. You got a lot of room to grow with that location.
We do. We are using probably a third of it right now. We have a number of community partners in there, which we're thrilled, like the Goodwill Excel Center, Gleaners and others. But we also have room for many more students. But again, aligned to the programs that the community needs. And we look forward to, as you said earlier, quadrupling in size as we give that opportunity for a student to start and complete a program in their home county as much as they can and be aligned with the employers there to have great careers.
All right. Ivy Tech Community College continuing to grow with the 19th official campus in Noblesville. Sue Elsperin, the president at Ivy Tech. Sue, as always, great to have you on the show. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Great to be with you, Gary.
For 23 years, sports broadcaster Dave First delivered the latest news surrounding the Colts, Pacers, high school football, and more. Now he's pursuing his greatest sports passion as the new vice president of communications for the NTT IndyCar Series. First, join Bill Benner on Inside Indiana Sports.
For those who may not know, just how did this all come about after a long and distinguished career in sports broadcasting?
Yeah, well, 2020, right? Who knows what to expect in a year like this? But, you know, I've been kind of thinking about maybe life after sportscasting. Not that I didn't enjoy it, not that I didn't love it. Still very much did, and still very much enjoyed each and every aspect. I mean, you talked about the professional sports and everything at the Speedway, but man, on Friday nights, I love nothing more than being at a high school football game or a high school basketball game. And so I think it was about, I don't know, early in the spring, early summer, things just kind of developed. I got a phone call from the folks at Penske Entertainment, and they say, hey, would you be interested in talking about something like this? And I'm like, there is no question that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and IndyCar racing and the NTT IndyCar Series has been a passion of mine for a long, long time. And part of it is because one of my predecessors at Channel 6 was the late, great Tom Carnegie. And he knew and appreciated what the Speedway had to offer for this city. And I kind of tried to pick up that baton and kind of ran with it at Channel 6. So I loved everything about the Speedway. And I thought, well, you know what? This is an excellent opportunity because of the Penske acquisition. This is a wonderful opportunity to see how far IndyCar and IMS can really go. And it's been a wonderful journey. It's only been a couple of weeks right now. My head's still spinning a little bit. I mean, I literally signed off the air at Channel 6 on a Wednesday at 6 o'clock, and it was in this office the next day at 8:30 in the morning. So the transition's been quick, but it has been something that I've thought about following, and I'm so glad that I've done it.
And the pandemic notwithstanding, I think there is cause for cautious optimism for the future of IndyCar in general, and certainly the Indianapolis 500 and the Speedway and all the things that are going on out there in particular. But again, IMS and the NTT IndyCar Series, they are hand in hand, and one kind of lifts the other.
And there's no question about that. And I know that fans haven't been able to come out and see yet. Remember, tickets are on sale. Yes, we've got fans for the Grand Prix coming up on Friday and Saturday at the Speedway. But fans really haven't been able to take in some of the changes and the improvements and the things that, Roger Penske has done literally from day one when he talked about the acquisition. Yes, it is a facility that is well over 100 years old, but when you go into it now, it looks anything but. It's fresh. The restrooms have changed. There's a fresh coat of paint everywhere. Video boards really at every turn. It is a much different looking Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I know all the folks here on this side of the street, on 16th Street, and on the other side as well. Can't wait to welcome the hundreds of thousands that'll be there next year and for years to come.
And Dave, there won't be hundreds of thousands, but there will be some thousands on hand for the Harvest Grand Prix coming up next weekend. Qualifying Thursday, races on Friday and Saturday, and so that's certainly an exciting development.
No question. Health officials in the county and the city said, hey, look, you know, we can get 10,000 in there each and every day. And don't forget, Sunday is a race day as well, not for the NTT IndyCar Series. The sports cars are going to be there for an endurance race. It's a weekend full of racing. So socially spaced, everyone's going to be wearing masks, making sure those hands are nice and cleansed and whatnot. But 10,000 every day, it's going to be fun to see fans back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
And then, of course, the series will wrap up in St. Petersburg, where it was all supposed to start way back when, on October 25th.
That's going to be the season finale. And don't forget, I mean, there's some other exciting news coming out, I think, the next couple of weeks. Let's talk about the next year's schedule as well, and some special benefits and some special ideas that the series has coming up in 2021. But it's a good time to be a part, I think, of Penske Entertainment and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and certainly the IndyCar Series.
Yeah, and real briefly, the big announcement for next year was the addition of a street race in Nashville. That's going to be, I think, that's going to have huge potential.
It's been talked about literally for years. Tony Kottman is a developer. He designs racetracks, does a wonderful job in doing that. And he calls that layout that he designed for the Music City Grand Prix in Nashville probably one of the best designs he's ever come up with or helped design. And so can't wait. It's going to come up in August, and there's already a buzz down there. Nashville is an international city, not just country music down there. Obviously, you take a look at the other sports, NHL, NFL, certainly. It is a much different city than it was 20 years ago. And the fact that the IndyCar Series can say now that they're racing in Nashville, Tennessee, is a huge, huge feather in the cap.
Well, Dave, first, again, congratulations on your move to the other side. And we wish you nothing but the best. And we look forward to seeing you both at the NTT IndyCar Series, the Harvest Grand Prix, the Speedway. And you'll still be a familiar face. Good luck to you, my friend.
And finally this week, food insecurity has become a bigger problem during the pandemic, and the Million Meal Movement organization is looking to help. This year marks the 10th year for the group's signature event, the Million Meal Marathon. Co-founder Nancy Hintz joined us with details.
This is a really wonderful story, and a story of growth, a philanthropic effort. First of all, just to tee things up, Nancy, we hear a lot about hunger in Indiana and the dramatic situation facing a lot of families, a lot of individuals. The pandemic is really underscores that, correct?
Absolutely. So our food partners are seeing an unprecedented demand for food, 2 to 3 times that of what they typically see. And Feeding America is estimating that well over 17 million additional people will find themselves food insecure in the coming days. So about for every 5 people that would come to a food bank, 2 of those families are there for the very first time. So the need, unfortunately, is great.
Wow. You and your husband founded the million meal movement 13 years ago. So it's been quite a journey. As you look at the growth of the program, it's typically a one-day event, right, where you bring a lot of people together at Lucas Oil Stadium. Talk about what a typical event in terms of the million meal marathon has been like.
So the marathon is our signature event. We actually have well over 100 events a year. But for the marathon, we gather together well over 2,000 volunteers, and that's due to our corporate sponsors like the Colts, Strada Education, as well as Stanley. And we have people from all ages and abilities to come normally to Lucas Oil Stadium in one day and strive to package a million meals. Due to the pandemic, our goal is to keep everyone safe, and so we have stretched out the marathon over a month-long period. And so we have 40 packaging events scheduled throughout the month, but they're much smaller events, and they're at our location, and we employ, say, social distancing measures in order to keep everyone safe. And so we have schools as well as companies, employees, and families gather and still be able to package those 1 million meals.
Yeah, so again, the event this year is October 13th through November 7th at these multiple locations. Nancy, as you look back on this and reflect back, you look at the impact that you have had, the amazing impact that you have had regarding hunger here in Indiana. Did you think when you started this that you would create something that would be so substantial?
Honestly, I had a passion for it, and I was just really hoping that there would be others who would see the amazing impact that it can make, not only in being able to address the need of hunger, but also to be able to foster the sense of volunteerism in youth and really anyone of any age. Particularly what I loved about it is you can have all ages and all abilities come together to help someone else. And so it's really neat to be able to see people who really did not have that understanding that no matter who they are, they can make a difference, and to actually see that light bulb gone on over their head and realize that they can make an impact is a very special thing.
Yeah, indeed. The Million Meal Marathon and the movement making a real difference. Nancy Hintz, the co-founder of the Million Meal Movement, along with her husband. Thanks very much. Good luck with the event this year. We look forward to seeing how things go.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.